House will come to order. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Baker. Here. Barlow. Here. Berger. Here. Blake. Here. Blevins. Here. Blickery. Here. Brown. Brown. Burkhart. Here. Bird. Here. Campbell. Here. Kennedy. Here. Coleman. Here. Connolly. Here. Davison. Davison. Eklund. Here. Esquivel. Filer. Freeman, here. Gay, here. Gingery, here. Goggles, here. Greer, here. Green, here. Halverson, here. Harshman, here. Harvey, here. Hunt, here. Hutchings, here. Yagi, here. Kasparik, here. Kirkbride, here. Croker, here. Croker, here. Crone, here. Larson, here. Lockhart, here. Laux, here. Madden, here. McKim, here. Miller, here. Moniz, here. Nicholas, here. Northrup, here. Patton, here. Paxton, here. Petroff, Piperinen, Reeder, Simlick, here. Summers, here. Stubson, Stubson, Peters, here. Throne, here. Wallace, here. Walters, here. Watt, here. Wilson, here. Winters, Zwanitzer Dan, Zwanitzer Dave, Mr. Speaker, here. Brown, excused. Brown excused, Davison, Davison, here. Stubson, excused. Stubson excused, 58 present, 2 excused.
The prayer of the day is offered by Pastor Ernest Fitzhugh, representing the Unity Missionary Baptist Church in Cheyenne.
Good morning. This is the day that the Lord has made, and let us rejoice and be glad in it. Shall we bow? Gracious Heavenly Father, we come once again to attend to the business at hand. Glad that you bless these that are here. Bless their homes, their families, their surroundings. Keep us all in your keeping care, and let us make those decisions that will not only glorify you, but would help mankind. We thank you for the opportunity once again just to be in service. Now, Lord, we ask for blessings upon our entire union, United States of America, bless the USA. Keep us all in your keeping care. We be careful to give your name the praise, the honor, and the glory. And all these things I do pray in your precious name. Amen.
With that order of business, of Journal Committee report.
Your Journal Committee reports that the Journal of February 5, 2013 has been read and recommends that be approved, signed by Representative Winters and Filer.
Representative Blickery, privilege of the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Fellow representatives, today I stand with Representative Don Burkhart from Carbon County because our page of the day today is from Carbon County, from Rawlins, as a matter of fact. Her name is Caitlin France. I'm lucky enough to be her godfather. Her parents are sitting straight up there, if they'd stand. It's Copper and Tara France from Rawlins. Caitlin is a fourth grader at Rawlins Elementary School, and she's going to do a good job for you today. Don't give her too much candy.
The doctor of the day today is Dr. Robert Orovec, MD from Cheyenne. The nurse of the day is a good friend of the House of Representatives and married to a former member of this body, Penny Eichel from Sheridan, Wyoming. Welcome. Madam Speaker Pro Tem.
We are at that order of business of Senate files on first reading. The first Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 146.
Senate File 146 is introduced by Representative Escobel.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to children.
Senate File 146 is referred to Judiciary Committee Number 1. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 160.
Senate File 160 is introduced by Senator Geis.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to pesticides.
Senate File 160 has been referred to Committee 5, Agriculture. The next bill for consideration is Senate File 149.
Senate File 149 is introduced by Representative Hochstetter.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to game and fish.
Senate File 149 has been referred to Committee Number 6, Travel. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 155.
Senate File 155, introduced by Senator Hicks.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to big game licenses.
Senate File 155 has been referred to Travel, your Committee 6. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 135.
Senate File 135 is introduced by Senator Scott.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to regulation of health care facilities.
Senate File 135 is referred to your Committee Number 10, Labor. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 153.
Senate File 153 is introduced by Representative Landon.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to unemployment insurance.
Senate File 153 has been referred to your Committee Number 10, Labor. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 152.
Senate File 152 is introduced by Senator Scott.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to offenses by public officials.
Senate File 152 has been referred to Committee Number 12, Rules. Reports from standing committees.
Madam Chairman, your Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 4, Senate File 41, engrossed State Park ATM donations, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representative Blevins, Davison, Freeman, Halverson, Hutchins, Yeagie, Crone, Pipirinen, and one no vote, Representative Gay, signed by Representative Davison, Chairman. Madam Chairman, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred Senate File 45, engrossed, restricted driver's license modifications, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blake, Blevins, Campbell, Yeagie, Laux, McKim, Reeder, Dave Zwanitzer, one no vote, Representative Hutchins, signed by Representatives Dave Zwanitzer, Chairman. Madam Chairman, the Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs, to whom is referred Senate File 51, Federal Motor Carrier Safety Act Compliance, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blake, Blevins, Campbell, Hutchins, Yeagie, Laux, McKim, Reeder, and Dave Zwanitzer, signed by Representative Dave Zwanitzer, Chairman. Madam Chairman, your Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred Senate File 87, engrossed, proof of motor vehicle insurance, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blake, Blevins, Campbell, Hutchins, Yeagie, Laux, McKim, Reeder, Dave Zwanitzer, signed by Representative Dave Zwanitzer, Chairman. Madam Chairman, your Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs, to whom was referred Senate File 126, engrossed, overweight, and oversized vehicles, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blake, Blevins, Campbell, Hutchins, Yeagie, Laux, McKim, Reeder, Dave Zwanitzer, signed by Representative Dave Zwanitzer, Chairman. Madam Chairman, Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred Senate File 22, engrossed, Uniform Consumer Credit Code Amendments, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Byrd, Kennedy, Greer, Kasperic, Larson, Lockhart, Reeder, Somers, and Winters, signed by Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
With that order of business of bills on second reading, the first bill for our consideration is Senate File 2.
Senate File Number 2 is introduced by Senator Rebout, an act relating to oil and gas.
Senate File 2, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 3.
Senate File 3 from the Minerals Committee, an act relating to oil and gas.
Senate File 3, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 8.
Senate File 8 from School Facilities Committee, an act relating to school capital construction.
There is an amendment on Senate File 8, Representative Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the adoption of the amendment that is before you on Senate File 8. We've got 100% figure in the one and 85% in the other, and making a calculation. The 100% actually really applies to grades 1 through 3, 4, that you can use a 100% figure for the calculation. I mentioned yesterday that 100% seems a little stringent. We ought to give them a little bit of room. I don't know about you, but not all babies were planned, and not all communities plan the same number of babies that are going to enter the school. If we could do that, heavens forbid, if we could do that, well, we could use 100%. Other than that, I think some latitude ought to be given to the calculation and suggest the adoption of the amendment at 90%. Move your approval of the amendment.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rising on and against the amendment, one of the things that this provision does in Senate File 8 is it moves out from the current process of determining capacity from 5 years of the date of design to 5 years of the date of completion. So the net result is that by passage of this bill, schools will be larger. And that's the one thing that everyone needs to understand. We're going to be more generous in our square footage estimates because of the fact that we're moving that capacity day out 5 years from the date of completion. The current practice is 100%, and so for us to maintain that principle, that also being said, that because we're only talking about homerooms, we're talking about it is definitely different than dealing with elementary versus the secondary schools, because those children are in those classrooms all day long. That is their homeroom. That is their class. And 100% has been the standard. We took evidence during the interim in the school facilities committee about looking at it from different angles and different perspectives, and the overall agreement from the committee as well as the recommendation from the consultants is the recommendation that we forwarded. I haven't heard compelling evidence that we should change course from that, and I would urge you to vote no on the amendment.
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I encourage you to vote no on the amendment. The 90 was actually the old policy, and I think good representative probably talked about where we counted everything. So this 100 actually will be a proper, more accurate, and I think really the right way to go on this to make sure we build our schools. It's always that thing. That's what we always deal with in the legislature. You know, is it enough? Is it too much? Or is it just right? And we think we've found a pretty good method. So urge your no vote.
Anybody else for their first time? First time. Second time prior to the sponsor. Representative Patton.
Policy is one thing. Statute is something else. Statute is pretty rigid, and with the strict interpretation that we seem to find from the top-down administration in education, want to give them some latitude. I'd be satisfied with 95, but give them some wiggle room. 90% was what it was before. I think it's appropriate to remain at 90.
We're voting on second reading amendment number 1 to Senate file number 8. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate file number 8, or second reading amendment number 1 to Senate file 8 has failed. Senate file 8, having been read 2 separate times, question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate file 10.
Senate file 10, as introduced by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to the Supreme Court.
Senate file 10, having been read 2 separate times, question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate file 12.
Senate file 12, from the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to child support payments.
Senate file 12, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate file 13.
Senate File 13 from the Corporations Committee, an act relating to the Uniform Commercial Code.
Senate File 13 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 14.
Senate File 14 from the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to penal institutions.
There is an amendment. Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate file 14. Yesterday when we were debating this bill, a couple of concerns came up, and I just wanted to allow us to have the discussion on the primary one. What this amendment does, it leaves the first two parts of the bill intact, but the part expanding the correctional industries into offering services is what it would take out. And my concern is I'm kind of mixed. I feel strongly about both sides of this issue. I completely support the concept of taking prisoners, giving them something to do, letting them get training that will actually prove useful to them when they get out in the real world, and the costs that are from this program can help pay for their incarceration. So I completely support that, but at the same time, I'm a little bit nervous about them expanding into the services industry, because that starts stepping on the toes of the private sector, I believe, a little bit more strongly. And there was some discussion yesterday on what actually happens and what the steps are in place when potential competition is available. But I actually want to just read what the existing law says to make sure that there is no confusion on that. It says, rules and regulations promulgated under this subsection shall place limitations on competition with the private sector and will ensure that no contract entered into will result in the displacement of employed workers in the state in excess of limitations established by the Correctional Industries Advisory Board. So it doesn't say there will be no competition. It says it will be limited, and it doesn't say that they won't cause the private sector any jobs. It says they won't cost them jobs in excess of a number that's determined by their board. And that makes me nervous when you start getting into services, because the service industry, the job and the person working is what provides the income to the business owner. And so if you cut into that just a little bit, for a small business, the difference between having one extra employee who's busy 100% of the time and busy 50% of the time might be the difference between them turning a profit for the month and not. And the specific red flag that was raised for me, they talked about the type of services that they might get into, and one of them that came up was vehicle services. And that made me a little bit nervous, since part of my business is services to motorcycles and ATVs. And the testimony specifically mentioned natural gas conversion on vehicles. And that made me wonder, well, how do you define if that's competing with the private sector or not? Because where the prison is located, where they were talking about doing, was a couple hours away from the larger cities in Cheyenne, or in Wyoming. But for a major conversion like that, that's a several thousand dollar job. And that's the kind of thing that people are going to be willing to drive several hours to have done. And if the prisons are supporting that in a way with labor costs that are so much lower than the private industry can compete with, I'm just thinking of my hometown. I mean, you know, if I owned a company that did that, losing one job a month is probably the difference between my staying in business and my having to close my doors with a job that big. And I don't know how you would monitor the competition. So I'm just nervous. I would urge caution. So I brought this amendment so we could have the discussion on do we want to expand into services or not. And with that, I'll stand for any questions.
Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I didn't serve on the Joint Judiciary Interim Committee this past summer, but since I'm chairman of Judiciary, I feel like I'm obligated to somehow defend their work, since they did something this summer, and this was one of their bills. So I'm not falling on my sword over this one, but I'll just get up and tell you what they tell me that they were discussing this summer, is that they went and, I guess, I don't know if it was this year or last year, they toured one of the prison facilities and got in a long discussion about the industry aspect of it. And they were sort of into it, but the prison system has not really expanded that system very much. And my understanding is the committee said, "Boy, we'd really like you to see you expand industries." So one of the things they did, they went and found this woman in another state that is like a real expert on correctional industries and brought her to our state, and she made a bunch of suggestions on how to make this work even better. If you're actually going to do it, then here's how you make this work, and here's how other states have made it work. So I sort of took it from some of these discussions that DOC was sort of taking their direction from us to, you know, to really ramp up the correctional industry. So they came up with this bill, and all the first two parts and are still in the bill, and that's fine. This part, the amendment's just dealing with the providing services part. The one example that she gave that I thought was the primary example was in the town that has the women's prison, there are two hotels there. There's no major laundry service, and they would like to utilize the big washer and dryers that they have at the prison, the women's prison. And so what they would do is it would be an industry and take the sheets and stuff from the local hotels and be able to provide that service to those hotels. That was the example, one of the examples she gave. I didn't see a huge issue with that because I'm doubting that that particular town has ever, you know, maybe someday, would have a laundry service like that. She also explained that in her testimony that they have this advisory board set up, and that advisory board reviews all of these and makes sure that they're not impacting private industries. And each one that they come up with, and she was throwing out a lot of different ideas, and I'm not sure if they've actually settled on anything. I think they're sort of waiting to see if we allow them to do services. Each one will be a little bit different. I mean, where the maximum security prison is, you know, in that particular town, you know, maybe there's some service that isn't being provided there by private industry that the prison might decide to get into. Where the medium security is, that town, maybe there's something. Or at the town where the women's prison is. So you have about three towns, essentially, that we're talking about that there might be some services to provide. But the primary example she gave was laundry. And anyway, I feel as though I've done my duty as the chairman to defend the work of the interim committee.
Representative Crone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and against the amendment, a few points that I'd like to bring up. First of all, this is a very limited program, as is. There's about 185 inmates that are in the industry program as it sustains today. The Department of Corrections estimates about another 60 that would be part of this program should we expand into services. So it's a limited program. As to the good representative from the Senator of the State's comments that the statute does not completely prohibit competition with private business, I think that the good chairman of Judiciary hit on that. There's some partnerships that exist out there, and there would be some partnerships that would continue to develop, particularly in light of the laundry service and the Braille transcription, which was discussed tomorrow. So there are some public-private partnership opportunities that exist. As to the representative from the Senator of State's concern about his particular concern about auto vehicles, I think there was pretty clear testimony that should there be a direct conflict, that conflict could be taken to the Correctional Industries Advisory Board, and if there was an objection to that, that activity would cease. So I think in terms of expanding into services, I think it's limited. I think that there are safeguards in place, and I would urge the defeat of the amendment and support of the bill. Thank you.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and for the amendment. I spoke with a lobbyist this morning to just clarify some things. One of the concerns that he has is this advisory board. It's great that this current advisory board is able to understand our concerns, but his concern was any change in the advisory board, any change in those individuals. He also brought to my attention a situation with a plant down in the state south of us that a personal friend of his is a contractor who's competing against another contractor who utilizes these services, and he says it's just unfeasible for him to be able to competitively compete against that other contractor. So on and against the amendment.
Anybody else for their first time? Chairman Harvey, are you just standing there? Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Speaker, on and against the amendment. You know, there's a little more going on here than just whether they're going to provide services or not. The thing that bothers me about this is that once they begin to provide services, they may preempt the market. And then a private provider won't enter the market because the service is being provided by the correctional facility. And if that's the case, then you're not going to see an opportunity for a private provider to get into the market unless the market expands so far that the private provider can see room to provide the service in competition with the correctional facility. And I just don't like that where that's going. So on and for the amendment.
Anyone else for your first time? First time. Second time, Chairman Gingery.
Well, since the former chairman of Judiciary just said that it's bad, I guess I don't have to defend it as much anymore. So I have done my duty. But if the former chairman, I mean, that it was his committee. It was the interim committee. So if they want to take that out, that's fine by me then. So I guess go ahead and vote for the amendment.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just on and for the amendment.
Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I said before, since this was the issue that was really contested most in the committee, I thought it was appropriate to have this discussion on the floor. I thank everyone for their comments. And the last thing I want to say, when we were debating a different bill this session, it was brought up that legislation shouldn't be based on goodwill between departments. Or something along those lines. I think this is kind of that case. I think there's goodwill now. I think that the way it is working now, there's no issues. But it just scares me that things can change in the future, and I think we might be setting up a situation where if that goodwill isn't there in the future, that private industry could get stepped on a little bit. So I would ask your support of the amendment.
We're voting on second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 14. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 14 passes. All in favor of second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 14, please stand. Opposed. Well, you fooled me on that one. Second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 14 fails. Senate File 14 having been read 2 separate times, question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 15.
Senate File 15 from the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to penal institutions.
Senate File 15 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 18.
Senate File 18 from the Corporations Committee, an act relating to surveyors and engineers.
Senate File 18 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered.
The next order of business is consideration of House Bill 1 on second reading.
House Bill number 1 from the Appropriations Committee, an act relating to supplemental appropriations for the operation of state government.
Members of the House, the ground rules for this are as follows. The amendments are considered by section in the budget bill. Once we pass a section, we can't go back. And so you do have a purple sheet, and the amendments will be considered in the order on that sheet, not in numerical order. So the first amendment for our consideration is amendment number 41, Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, I move second reading amendment 41 to House Bill 1. Members, this is a technical correction. This is number 41. Technical correction. There's really 4 issues here. So if you took lines, actually the first correction is on line 2. And in the budget bill it says two, and it should be one transfer of an ETS position. The second technical correction is lines 4 through 10. These are citations in major maintenance for our colleges that we need to correct. The next one is a change. It is a lines 12 through 21, and you can see the word section to subsection is changed, and that's in the employee compensation piece. Now, there's amendments on that later, but this is a technical correction to what's in the budget. And then the last technical correction is on line 23 and 24, where we delete revenue and insert health, and this is the tax refund for the elderly disabled, and it's run by the Department of Health, not revenue. So I'd stand for any questions or ask call for the question on these technical corrections.
Question being called. All those in favor of second reading amendment number 41 to House Bill 1 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Amendment number 41 to House Bill 1 is passed. The next amendment for our consideration is amendment number 29. Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Majority Floor Leader, I move Second Amendment 29 to House Bill 1. This one is kind of a study that we've been doing and a discussion that we've been having to try to look at the efficiency and performance of YDOT with their $1.1 billion budget, biennial budget. I've talked this over with a lot of people, with the downstairs and some leadership, and then I went to our research folks, and they came up with a couple big organizations, big companies that do this type of auditing, not auditing, but performance studies of companies, and they found that they have saved lots of money. So with their suggestion, I started out at $300,000, and the downstairs, our research said, looking at this group, they would suggest $500,000 for this study. And I just thought it would be a good use of funds. So that's the purpose of this. And I'll let you think about that for a minute.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. The genesis of this idea came several years ago when the good representative from House District 52, the district north of mine, talked about the experience that her major corporation that she worked for had in working with one of these groups in determining efficiencies in mining operations. I've been working on this idea with others for several years. I'm glad the good representative from the Southwest undertook to move forward with this budget amendment. These types of efficiencies, the mining companies in my neighborhood thought they were efficient until they met with these organizations, and they paid for themselves with low-hanging fruit within a matter of a few weeks and have made those mines very, very efficient. So I would encourage your investment in efficiency. I think that you will find that in a billion-dollar budget, that $500,000 is a good investment in efficiency in that organization.
Chairman's warrant, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. I rise against this particular amendment. This is kind of the first that I've caught a glimpse of what they're doing. But let me remind the body that this department had an independent study done by a large consulting firm from the Hoosier State, and they went through every aspect of their budget, of their efficiencies, if they're doing the right road work, putting all the lines between the dots. And they did, as I mentioned earlier in the session, come up finding a little bit, but it was like just a minor fraction compared to the $1 billion budget that you've heard. I'd also like to remind you that we have a commission that oversees that department. So the department can't just go out and start spending money however they want to. They have to go through a commission. They're the ones that decide which roadways we put in, and if the funding's correct, if it's the right thing to do for the next project in the state, to keep it out of the politics that department could sure be involved in if it was just a direct connection to that department, where if you had a road in your district that you really wanted done, you could put some pressure on it. So we have a self overseen commission that looks over this department, and I don't know how many studies we put through this body, but $500,000 for a study just seems like way over the top to me. We study all sorts of things for a tenth of that. So on and against this amendment.
Berman Madden. Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Just to kind of take off from that, I'd need to know why the amendment focuses on that department, because that's the department that has had most of these studies done to it already. We have other large departments that could have been listed as having a special study, like the health department or game and fish or the education department. And to my knowledge, a similar study like that hasn't been done already. But with the YDOT, they've already, they're so far ahead of all the other departments in these efficiency studies that it seems like you're throwing good money after money that's already been spent. So I'd urge you not to support this. Anyone else for the first time? Anyone for their second? Representative Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Rising in favor of the concept of this, I may want to come back if this gets through on a third reading amendment, because what we can't tell by this amendment is who's going to do the studies and who's going to select who their studies are from. And perhaps we can work on the amount of it. But here's what my concerns are. If we pass the fuel tax and it goes by, and now suddenly there's another $40, $45 million for the highway department, what we know is they said they need $100 to $130 million per year to continue to move on from us. And the independent studies that I have seen in the past, the fact is that those studies, they're independent in a sense, but they're controlled and driven by the commission. I think we need a study in an in-depth analysis that is not done by the Highway Commission. It's done from an independent source, such as the JEC or some other folks, and we go out and sit down with those experts and say, now look, this is what we want. This is what they've shown us. But do we really need to spend $100 million a year additional, or another $60 million over the fuel tax? And let's walk through why, the whys and wherefores and all those elements as to prepare our fails for the next 15 or 20 years.
Chairman Horstman.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. On and against Amendment Number 29, and I think the good Chairman of Revenue and Transportation, I won't repeat their words, but this agency has been studied and will continue to be studied. I mean, it's such a big expenditure that efficiency is key. And so, again, to take this out of general fund and decrease our goldenrod today, I just ask you to vote no.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With hesitancy, I'm going to support this for a couple of different reasons that have been alluded to. But primarily, there's a bill that's working its way through that is going to allow us to bring this off-budget agency back on budget. The fact is that the vast majority of this budget is one that we have not had an opportunity to see. This study would actually dovetail very nicely with the work that the JAC is going to be doing over the interim, hopefully, if that bill is ultimately successful. And we will be able to review that budget in detail. And the studies that have been done before are, in fact, internal studies, studies that have, as has been mentioned, been driven by the commission itself, which is a group of individuals who are very dedicated to what they're doing. But the fact is they kind of have blinders on, and they only see that narrow scope. And what we need is somebody from the outside. And this is something that was very evident in the private sector that Mr. Speaker mentioned. My experience in the private sector is that it was incredibly valuable to private companies to spend I can guarantee you many more dollars than we are talking about here to have an absolutely independent, outside, expert entity that this is their business coming into global corporations and figuring out from the outside what that company is doing. And they were willing to spend those dollars because they garnered, in some instances, seven times the value. In other words, they came in, they spent those dollars well in excess of what we're talking about here, and were able to realize enormous value as a result of that exercise. That's what we need in government just as much as we need in private enterprise.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and for the amendment, and to be brief, yeah, those mine facilities we talked about up in that area of Wyoming are the most efficient in the world. The world looks to those mines on how to do it around the world. It's a good idea to take a look at it. I'm not so sure even the same consultants that came and did those efficiency studies up there couldn't do this for our own highway department. I think it'd be a good idea to make sure we approach them. But of all the state agencies I can think of, this is really the one that pops out as the one where one of these efficiency studies might go a long ways and really be able to stretch our declining dollars here. So on and for the amendment.
Representative Pipirinen.
I, too, stand on and for the amendment that the good representative from the Southwest has offered here. I agree with what's been said here. We're looking at a $1 billion budget here. I think I consider myself a fiscal conservative, and I really think an investment of $500,000 is money well spent. Thank you.
Anyone else for their first time? Anyone for their second time before the sponsor? Representative Nicholas.
Thank you. And I would agree with the Chairman Appropriations that this should not come out of general funds. And so if this survives, I'll come back with a third ring amendment so that that's not where the money comes from.
Chairman Zwanzer.
Thank you, Mr. Floor Leader. Let me remind the body that they keep talking about this $1-point-something-billion budget that we have for the department, but 85% of that is federal funds, and most of those federal funds are very distinctive about where and how they have to be spent. So when we're looking at $500,000, we're not looking at $500,000 to look at a $1-point-whatever-million budget. We're looking at the state portion and how we can, satisfy maybe some concerns that we have there. But, and then let me just also reiterate that we do have self-imposed policing of that department, and we study it day after day after day, and I would again ask you to vote no on this.
Anyone else for the second time before the sponsor? Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. I think there were some good comments raised here. I still think we need to look at this. There's a lot of concerns that have been raised. Talk about the efficiency of this major department of our government. I have had subcontractors, counties, cities discuss this and say, you know, there is a better way to do some of the things we're doing, and that's all this group would do. I will get you some information on the type of study, performance efficiency, as a handout tomorrow. And I just think we really have something going here that we ought to follow through with to make sure the money is being spent as efficiently as we can get it. And to maintain our roads, I think we're all very aware that we need good roads, interstates, county, city roads. And with the fuel tax passing, that's another $70 million that is coming. So I'd appreciate your support of this so we can move this along. Thank you.
The question is on Amendment 29 to House Bill 1. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, no.
No.
Chairs in doubt, all those in favor, please stand. Members of the House, Rule 11-3 on amendments to the budget bill provides that after a voice vote in which the ayes prevail on an increase, the ayes and noes must be taken. So the clerk will call the roll.
Baker.
Aye.
Barlow.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
No.
Blevins.
No.
Blevins.
No.
Flickery. Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
No.
Bird.
No.
Campbell.
No.
Kennedy.
No.
Coleman.
Aye.
Connolly.
No.
Davison.
Aye.
Eklund.
No.
Eklund.
No.
Esquibel.
No.
Filer.
No.
Freeman.
Aye.
Gay.
Aye.
Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles.
No.
Greer.
Aye.
Green. Halverson.
Aye.
Harshman.
No.
Harvey.
Aye.
Hunt.
Aye.
Hutchings.
Aye.
Yagi.
Aye.
Kasparik.
Aye.
Kirkbride.
No.
Croker.
Aye.
Crone.
Aye.
Larson.
Aye.
Lockhart.
No.
Laux.
Aye.
Madden.
No.
McKim.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Moniz.
No.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Northrup.
Aye.
Patton. Paxton.
Aye.
Petroff.
Aye.
Pieperinen.
Aye.
Reeder.
Aye.
Semlick.
Aye.
Summers.
Aye.
Stubson.
No.
Teeters.
No.
Throne.
No.
Wallace.
Aye.
Walters.
Aye.
Watt.
Aye.
Wilson.
No.
Winters.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dan.
No.
Zwanitzer Dave.
No.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
Nicholas, would you clarify your vote? Thank you. I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 37 aye, 23 no.
Amendment 29 has been adopted by the House. Madam Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Privilege of the floor.
Please proceed.
Today, and I'd like to thank them for sitting quietly through that last discussion, today it's is second annual Digital Learning Day being celebrated in state houses across the country. We have been joined today by the students, parents, and teachers of the Wyoming Virtual Academy. They'll be available this morning in the Hirschler Building West Atrium to demonstrate their online learning, how their online learning has worked for them, and they look forward to sharing stories with all of us, although will be here. Please join me in welcoming them. They do have a lunch at 11:30 if anybody's skipping their caucus.
Welcome to the House. The next amendment for our consideration is Amendment Number 42 to House Bill 1. Madam Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. You know, we really need shorter titles. They're kind of hard to say. Members, I bring you Second Reading Amendment Number 42 to House Bill 1, and I would ask for your favorable consideration. As I think all of you know, we participated in an extensive review of agency budgets, and I, for one, very much appreciated serving on Judiciary and having an opportunity to examine the budgets of the agencies under our jurisdiction, so to speak. this agency was not one that came through judiciary, but with as I learned in the judiciary process, with these small agencies and agencies that do a lot of work with a few people, cutting a position is penny wise and pound foolish. So what this amendment does is restore a position to the Secretary of State. Unlike other positions that were cut for the elected officials, this is filled by a real person. A person with 8 years of experience in the Secretary of State's office and 27 years of experience in state government. So we're cutting somebody who's very experienced, knowledgeable of the agency, to save $121,000. Just a quick little bit of information. The Secretary of State's office in the last 18 years, the Secretary of State's office has only added 2 general funded positions. If all our agencies had been so efficient, we wouldn't be talking about cuts today. Second of all, the Secretary of State's office collects, processes, and returns to the general fund over $36 million every biennium. And these revenues are processed in small checks. The Secretary of State's office provides a lot of services to different communities, a lot of service to the business community and the formation of corporations, UCC filings, elections. We've all benefited from the service provided by the Elections Division. We've also increased the Secretary of State's duties over the years in terms of more security fraud investigation, and also the Secretary of State is the registrar for rules and managing that process so that folks can learn what rules apply to them is also very important to our business community. So we're cutting an agency that provides services to the private and public sector. We're cutting an experienced and valuable employee. This is not a vacant position. There's a real person in it, a real person who's served this state for a number of years and is a valued employee of this agency, all to save $121,000. That really doesn't make sense, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I rise in support of this amendment. I would just point out that this person also helps to put together all the cases, all the criminal cases, that deal with business fraud. And that takes a lot of work to take very complicated cases and prep them and get them ready for trial. And this person helps and actually does the work. And if that person's not doing it, then it would transfer over. The prosecution part's done by the AG's office, but the prep work's not being done in the Secretary of State's office. All you're doing is shifting it to the AG, and I think you're going to end up seeing the AG have to say, hey, I need another employee. So this is a person that's extremely important. If we're going to take business fraud seriously in the state and prosecute those cases of business fraud, we seriously need this person who has the experience and knows what they're doing in prepping for these cases.
Representatives, monitor the latter.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I also rise in favor of the amendment. I was on the committee that sat through the testimony on these reductions in the summer, and I certainly remember this one most vividly. Several agencies came before the Corporations Committee, this being one of them, and I certainly felt other agencies could cut more than their 10%, but this agency was one that I actually swore to myself, and we had a good discussion in interim about how we were going to restore this position. They have a limited number of employees. They're a small agency. And so they really went through everything and didn't have any excess. They, as you heard from the good presenter of the amendment, they've done a very diligent job the last 18 years about not increasing their staff, but to comply with, you know, the orders of the legislature and the governor's office, they had to, you know, offer something up. And this was one of the few positions they felt they had to get rid of something, and this is what they offered up to be in line with the edicts we put on them. But also in echoing the last speaker, what I really find interesting about this position is that their Secretary of State's office will have to begin contracting with the Attorney General's office for all of these services, and I would contend to you that it's going to be more expensive
We're actually going to see a budget increase overall in the budget because the Secretary of State's office is going to have to start providing contractual services with AG to do these business fraud cases, to do all of the things you need, someone with a legal background. And I went through in my head, I've been on this committee for 6 years, and I can't think of anybody else in that office that has a law degree in any of the divisions, and I could certainly be wrong, but at least people that have been before us over the years. We heard testimony in committee that this position, not only is their attorney, but they do other work as well, that there's just the wealth of knowledge of this individual for all of the divisions, you know, have a little bit of stake in this person. She did work for the AG's office before. This was, for those of you who weren't here when we made the change, I think in 05, that we let the five statewide elected officials have their own legal counsel. And I think I fought that at the point at the time because there are some other political motives involved. But in this agency, it's worked amazingly well. This person has provided a wealth of knowledge. They've cut down on costs to the contractual services to the Attorney General's office. So I'm in favor of the amendment just because I think it actually saves money by passing this amendment, because otherwise the agency is going to have to contract with an attorney position in the AG's office, and it's going to cost us more in the end run. So,
Mr. Majority Whip.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. On and against the amendment, it is interesting that we get to this point after numerous reviews and decide that, okay, this one agency we're not going to hold responsible like all the other state agencies. We're going to not demand the same cuts that we demand from the other state agencies. And just by way of history, you know, this isn't a position that was made up along the process to take out. This is one that when the budget cuts were happening, the Secretary of State's office came forward and said, this is where we can cut. We don't like it, and certainly no agency likes to cut. And it's hard, and certainly it's always hard to cut. But this is where the Secretary of State's office said in their whole operation, this was the place that they could cut. And it went before the Corporations Committee, and the Corporations Committee adopted that recommendation. And then it went downstairs, and the Chief Executive adopted that recommendation. Then it went through JAC. JAC adopted that recommendation. And now, on second reading amendment, we're going to say, no, it hurts too much. We're going to put this money back in. And this is, you know, this reflects the sort of thoughtful approach, I think, that governed the budget cutting across the agencies, because this isn't a full 8%. This is only 4% out of this budget. We didn't. We recognize it was a smaller budget, and it's highly personnel intensive, and so this a smaller amount was required from this agency. But this agency does do great work, and I've worked with them throughout the years, and they're a great agency to work with. But if we're going to take the position that, well, there's just some agencies that we can't even look at, that we can't even worry about cutting, then we're going to have a very hard time in the next biennium when we come back again and try to get another, 4 to 8% in cuts. So on and against the amendment.
Thurman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. On and against the amendment. This is one of two positions that are in essentially have a person currently employed. The other is an A&I in the mailroom that you'll see. That you've seen in Agency 6. So this is the only cut of this agency. The others that were proposed and brought forth by the by the governor in this agency were the computer system, which we restored, cuts to the computer system, and the printing of the Constitution, which we restored. So this is the only cut from Section 002. So on and against the amendment.
Representative Nicholas.
Thank you. On and against the amendment, a couple different things. One is that when you sit through the various agencies that come and they bring their cuts to us, different agencies have different philosophies. Some agencies will bring a cut that they know that you're not going to vote for. In other words, it's kind of like they put a front leader out there that if you chop off its head, then you're going to do some definite damage. So at the end of the day, you say, well, we can't cut this agency. And so it's kind of a shell game where they put out something and they say, nah, at the end of the day, they're not going to cut this, so that's what we're going to do. Other agencies are honest, and they work through their budget line items, and they find every penny they can to cut back. And so you just have to be careful about that way of thinking. And so, you know, I know this is a tough call, and they've got 31 employees down there. I don't think that they can not perform their function without it. It's only a 4% cut. And if you put this money back in, then what's going to happen next year when we need another 4 to 8% cut from this agency? Just something you got to keep in mind.
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. I guess a question I would have probably for the people who studied it. How many of the positions did the Secretary of State or this agency have that where the costs for cutting the person could just be passed on to another agency that we still end up paying for? Because it does seem curious that if we do cut them, we'll just pick it up somewhere else. Thank you.
Anyone else for the first time? Anyone for their second time before the sponsor? Representatives Wanitzer, the latter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I did ask that in committee. They have 31 positions. They don't, basically, to meet their 4%, they had to cut a position. And this was back when we were doing 8%. And so I even asked, because I always thought they had maybe one too many secretaries down there. That's going to come back to haunt me, I know. But that didn't make the cut. And so at this point, they were trying to achieve the 8% cut, and it was two secretary positions or this position. And so, and I won't disagree with the last speaker that some, maybe they offered this position up because it was almost essential. For those of us who know what the position does, I mean, when I call sometimes our staff in the room to my right, they have to call this person to get the right answer. Because even our LSO staff has to rely sometimes on the expertise of this individual. And I hope I can say that. So it is a really important position. There's not a lot of people that have this depth of knowledge that will work in the public sector, because they can make a lot more in the private sector, quite honestly, with the wealth of knowledge this person has. So that was the two things I wanted to bring up. One, at the time it was 8%, and they could cut two secretary positions or offer this position up. And it turned in only 4% cut in this case for this position. But I would submit to you that we come back in a year and we'll see that the Attorney General's office has had to hire maybe this position because of the wealth of knowledge at a higher level than we're paying that person now in the Secretary of State's office. I certainly hope that's the case, that somebody keeps this person in state government, because we need the wealth of knowledge they possess, quite honestly. And I think if you talk to the office or our branch of government, they will admittedly tell you there are times that we have to rely on this person, which is kind of scary. We should probably have more people in government that we can trust. But that's just to push back a little bit on why this position and not, because we were trying to meet the 8% cut at the time, and it was two secretaries with this position, and so they offered up this position. Thanks.
Madam Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. I very much appreciate the discussion. You know, businesses don't cut people with expertise just to save money to push it off onto another sector of their business operations. Our Secretary of State's office provides a lot of service. We know we need to crack down on business fraud. And, you know, actually the Secretary of State's office did not advocate for the removal of this position. It was one they had to offer up. And I think this sort of illustrates the problem with the process we've been going through. In the Judiciary Committee, we recognized that we couldn't slash and burn the courts, so they wouldn't be able to provide service to the public. And I'd argue to you that this is a similar situation. This person, with lots of years of experience, with expertise in a specialized area of securities issues, corporation formation, all those things that the Secretary of State does, and we need them to do to provide services to our business community and to keep everybody honest, we're going to throw them out over some arbitrary cutting process that just flat doesn't make sense in this situation. And that's why we're discussing it now. That's why we go through the budget, so all of us have a chance to look at these and see if it makes sense. This one doesn't make sense. So I'd urge you to vote aye on the amendment.
The question is on amendment number 42 to House Bill 1. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Chairs in doubt, all in favor, please stand. Thank you.
30.
Aye.
31.
The ayes prevail. This is a direct increase of an appropriation by a specific dollar amount. The clerk will call the roll.
Baker.
No.
Barlow.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Blevins.
Aye.
Flickery.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Bird.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
No.
Coleman.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Davison.
No.
Eklund.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Filer.
Aye.
Freeman.
Aye.
Gay.
Aye.
Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles.
Aye.
Greer.
No.
Green.
Aye.
Halverson.
No.
Harshman.
No.
Harvey.
Aye.
Hunt.
No.
Hutchings.
No.
Yagi.
Aye.
Kasparik.
No.
Kirkbride.
Aye.
Croker.
No.
Krohn.
No.
Larson.
No.
Lockhart.
No.
Laux.
No.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
No.
Miller.
No.
Moniz.
Aye.
Nicholas.
No.
Northrup.
Aye.
Patton.
Aye.
Paxton.
No.
Petroff.
Aye.
Pipirinen.
Aye.
Reeder.
No.
Simlick.
No.
Summers.
Aye.
Stubson.
No.
Teeters.
No.
Throne.
Aye.
Wallace.
No.
Walters.
Aye.
Watt.
No.
Wilson.
No.
Winters.
No.
Zwanitzer Dan. Zwanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker, I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Burkhart, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 31 aye, 29 no.
Amendment 42 has passed the House. The next amendment for our consideration is Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 1. Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. I move House Amendment Number 1 to House Bill Number 1 and ask for your favorable consideration. This amendment would add two service officers for the veterans. And as you know, our veterans go overseas, they do their duty, they come back, and once they come back, then they are faced with a lot of issues. And I think that we all know the importance of what they do for us, but the question is, what do we need to do for them now that they're back? And so here's what the service officers do. And just so you know, Wyoming is per capita probably on the bottom end of the number of service officers they have per population of the veterans. I believe we have about 55,000, 56,000. Of course, that varies as the years go on. But these guys are the ones that actually go out and check with our service people when they come back. And you know, some folks come back and have disabilities and obvious things, and those folks are pretty easy to pick out of the population, but a lot of them come back and they say, yeah, I'm fine. I'm fine. I didn't see anything. I didn't hear anything. But you know, really they do. And so these officers are the ones that go out and talk with those veterans on a one-on-one basis, check with them, see what they need. And here's the real catch. Our veterans go over, and they're trained in whatever areas they happen to be trained in. But I can guarantee you they're not trained when they come back to take on the massive paperwork that the federal government throws at you to receive any kind of benefit. They're just not. It's forms and just, I think, a stack about an inch thick if you need a benefit from the federal government. So these guys are there to help these veterans come back. And let me just read a couple things about what they do. They have a 180-page book that they basically need to memorize, and they take care of things like health benefits. Obviously, if they have service-connected disabilities, they know which forms, which departments to talk to back with the federal government, VA pensions. If they would like to go on and do some education or training, and they need some financing or other sort of information in that area, they help them along with some home loans because there are some guarantee type of programs that they're eligible for. The big one's just some transition assistance. Now that they're back in normal circumstances here in the U.S., what they need to do to to get into our group. So they let them know what organizations are available they can see. They also handle appeals for VA claim decisions if they don't go their way, and of course a lot of other benefits, and I only touched on about half of what they do. So what we are asking is to get two more service veterans, service officers. And we are asking that because these folks actually take people off of some of our state benefits and our state problems, and they put them to the federal end of the spectrum, and they start getting their VA assistance. And when they do that, then it takes a lot of the shift of where our funds go. So we're asking you to invest $100,000 or a little more, and I think that the statistics show that we get maybe like $1 million back. And with that, I'll stand for any questions.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. I would ask you to, I'm speaking against this, and I did in committee as well. And the reason is this. My husband is a Vietnam veteran. He received a military pension. He'd been diagnosed with several service-related things, including PTSD, as a result of his service in Vietnam. He also acquired some injuries and disabilities after he left the service. And we did almost 100% of his medical care and services were done through the VA. And I will tell you that I am quite proud of our VA system. We were treated very well. He received the services he needed. When we went in for, one thing, when we first started using them, which was probably 10 years ago, maybe 15, almost from the very beginning, from the moment he walked through the door, there were people there who were assisting us and pointing us towards other things that we hadn't even really thought about yet. You know, hearing tests, all sorts of different things. So the idea that as a military veteran that you don't have a way to find these services, well, I'm here to tell you folks, that's just flat wrong. Because everywhere we turned, there were people, websites, information being handed to us that said, if you think you might need this service, this is the office you go to. If you think you might need this service, this is the people you need to get on the phone. So the fact is that it is very easy for people to find these services that are available. Those are things that are very well advertised and encouraged by the federal military stuff. So the idea that we need to spend our state general fund dollars on extra people to do essentially things that are available and out there and easy to find for anyone, I just don't see the need for us to spend our state dollars on that when those things are already readily available.
Representative Watt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, these things are easy to find. Let me tell you something about post-traumatic stress disorder. I live with it. I've lived with it for now almost 31 years. I never had a bit of help. It was all out there. It was all easy for me to find. But I tell you what, when you're sitting in a closet with the light off, and you're sitting in there with your only friend, who happens to be a Model 1911, and you're sitting there and you're thinking about ending it, because you can't deal with the paperwork. You can't deal with the thought. You're so depressed. Yeah, yesterday you were perfectly fine and everybody looked at you as normal. And you were normal. But today you can't do it. And I agree that the help's out there and it is easy to find. If you can look, and these are some people that can't look, and they may not have seen the horrible things in battle, and they may not have been shot. But post-traumatic stress disorder affects each and every one of us in different ways. I've talked with officers, law enforcement officers who have been shot and injured worse than I have. And they never, never dealt with the things that I deal with. They never, ever had a nightmare. I tell you what, I've had 31 years of them. Every one of us is different. We need these positions. We need to say to our veterans, you are valuable for the service that you provided to us, and we are going to take care of you, and we're going to spend the money, regardless of how much money that is. They deserve this. And so I would ask you to vote yes on this amendment and give these people what they need.
Representative Hutchings.
Mr. Chairman, on and for this amendment, I just want to keep it brief to not repeat anything else that's been said. Just a quick reminder, we are still at war, so the number of our veterans returning home has increased. Just a quick reminder.
Mr. Minority Whip.
Thank you. Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Let's keep in mind here that we deploy and we have deployed these people from our National Guard. This is something we need to address right here in this room. These are people we ask to go out and defend our freedom and in a couple cases give the ultimate sacrifice. I think that to give back to them this small piece to help them readjust when they come back is just well within our purview, on and for the amendment.
Representative Blickery.
Mr. Chairman, there's a state to the northeast of Wyoming that begins with North. And that state has 60 veteran service officers. And as a result of having that many, they have roughly the same amount, not roughly, almost exactly the same amount of veterans as our state, Wyoming, has. As a result of having that many veteran service officers, they're able to bring about $30 million in funding from federal programs into that state that state doesn't have to use to help these same people in other programs. But at a different point, I remember 40-some years ago when I came home from Vietnam, had no idea whatsoever how to channel my way through the morass of paperwork that was involved. And those veteran service officers, or that one that was in the county where I was, helped me tremendously to move on, to be able to go to college, to be able to do a lot of things, and eventually even help me buy my first home here in Wyoming. So I hope you will do this for our veterans.
Representative Kirkbride.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, last fall I visited with a representative of the commission involved here, who's a very well-respected man in my district. At that time, they were talking about trying to add three of these officers. He quoted the figure that each officer could help veterans in the state, of which about one in every 10 person in Wyoming is a veteran. Each officer could help them access $1 million in funding. So I was surprised when we got here and found out not only weren't we adding three, but we were subtracting two. It seems to me when you cull the herd, you look for the weak and the sick and take off the bottom end. And in this case, we're applying the principle of culling from the top end from a very successful program. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Blake.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. I rise on in favor of this amendment. These people are experts. They take the veterans, help them fill out the paperwork, give them the help they need. So let's help them now. Vote yes on this amendment. Thank you.
Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. While being against this amendment might appear to be against our veterans, that's not the case. These positions are not required by law. They are not required either in the state or by federal. We do it out of the kindness of our hearts if we wish to fill these positions. Are they really necessary? I'm not sure, and I really think you can address the issues of benefits without them. My wife really dislikes dealing with any bureaucracy. When I walk in the house, I can usually tell if she's been doing it during the day just by the look on her face. She has an uncle who's in his 80s, served, was having some issues and problems, and that, and with a few phone calls on her own, getting the information he needed, she was able to get him all of the help he needed and to get him his benefits. We hear this, there's this big morass of paperwork out there. My wife, who is not a veteran, who has never dealt with the VA before, seemed to be able to navigate this with no problem whatsoever. So I wonder, you know, what problem we're trying to solve. We're trying to be nice, but, you know, how many of these are enough? One of the previous speakers said that another state has 60 of these. Is 60 enough, or should we start planning for 60 here in Wyoming? Or maybe to be really nice, we plan for 100. I'm not sure these people are absolutely necessary, especially considering our budget constraints at this time. Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. I really have a question. We've been in war now for about 12-plus years, and it's been a different kind of war in that there have been a lot of civilians who have been activated, a lot of National Guardsmen, and the kind of people that we didn't have in the, some of the other conflicts. And so I think there's a different kind of makeup of veterans than we had, at least back when I was in the Korean era. Now, my question is this. We've been doing something with these veterans. I've had a little bit of personal experience with the veterans' assistance, and I just don't know the numbers that we had, but what I heard just a moment ago is that this wasn't a new request. The request had been made earlier for three, and that now it was that was refuted, and we're down to two. How are we doing it now with the number that we have, and is that three a good number or not? And there's certainly a lot of veterans out there that need assistance, and I'm here to tell you that working your way through that paperwork of the federal government is awful, particularly if it's long-term since you've been in the military and they have to search the records. So I'd like a little clarification, if anybody knows, how are they getting it done now, and what difference will this two make going forward, and is there any other option than the two?
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. We currently there are five county veteran service officers and one private state veterans benefits coordinator. These would be on top of those. And I point out to you that these are the state employees that we already have in place that are already providing these services around the state. And that's layered on top of the services that are being provided at the VA centers. At the VA centers and all the branch offices or the clinics that are scattered around, like the one that's in the town closest to us, there are people there who their job, and I presume, although I don't know for sure, I presume that those people's salaries are being paid by the federal military departments, but there are people who are at every one of those facilities whose specialty and job is to handle benefits and handle applications. So what we're doing is we're layering over the top of an existing federal system state employees. And again, I just think that what we have in place has been working. My personal experience is that we were able to acquire all those services. We had all the help that we needed. That's already there. It's in place. We don't need to be stacking on more on top of that.
Representative Wallace, was that your second time? Well, then that's my bad, but everybody that hadn't spoken for their first time is now out of luck because she spoke for a second time. Is there anybody else for the second time before the sponsor? I've got to get this thing moving.
Mr. Chairman, that is not fair.
It's not fair, Representative Patton. If you are... you're right. Representative Patton, you're up. That's not in the rules, Representative Patton. If you want to go, you can. I'll give you the.
Remember Desert Storm? Anybody remember that Desert Storm? How long ago was that? Just last year, they finally settled a claim that was made for a guy that was blown off of a tank. It takes time. It's complicated. And not only is it reviewed, it's reviewed, it's reviewed. And these people need all the help that we can give them. So I'm on and for the amendment.
Representative Blevins.
I am on and for this amendment also. And I think we've had some good anecdotal stories about how this system works and how well it works. But I want to remind you of the Vietnam veteran who is aging now, and when they came back to America, they were not welcomed. And in many cases, that drove them into isolation, especially if you didn't have a mate that would work through the paperwork with you. So I think it's our obligation to find those senior veterans and help them before it's too late.
Is there anyone else for their first time? Representative Yagi.
Thank you. I'd just like to say in southwest Wyoming, we do not have any center. We do not have access. So the county has hired one person who works part-time, and she is has way more than she can do. And, the inference that everybody has access to this all over, just not true. So I'm for this.
Anyone else for the first time? Anyone else for their second time before the sponsor? Chairman Zwanzer.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Great discussion, members of the body. I do want to try to answer the fine chairman from House District 57 and incorporate what he asked. We heard this in the interim, and the committee was in favor of this, and we put it on the governor's recommendation. We asked him to go through the budget process and talk to the governor. This was on the governor's recommendation. So this isn't anything new that we just happened to sprout out. Somehow when it went in through appropriations, it got cut out. So that's the genesis of how it happened, and I believe our committee felt that it was needed, and obviously the executive branch felt it was needed. Be aware that these service consultants are actually the legal eyes for the VA or for the veteran against the VA. And that's very important to know because they actually have to help them fill the paperwork out. And not all these veterans can fill paperwork out. I know some of them can. Maybe a lot of them can. But we're losing the ones that can't. So, and the only other thing I'd say, one of the representatives mentioned that the Rough Rider State has the same population that we do and they have 40. Well, the Green Mountain State is another state about the same population, and they bring in an extra $15 million a year to their state because they have these service officers. So with that, Mr. Majority Floor Leader, I'll call for the question.
The question is on second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 1. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The amendment passes. Under Rule 11.3, the ayes prevailing on an increase to the appropriation, a roll call vote is required. The clerk will call the roll.
Baker.
Aye.
Farlow.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Blevins.
Aye.
Flickrey.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Bird.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Coleman.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Davison. Eklund, Esquivel, Filer, Freeman, Gay, Gingery, Goggles, Greer, Green, Halverson, Harshman, Harvey, Hunt, Hutchings, Yagi, Kasparik, Kirkbride, Croker, Crone, Larson, Lockhart, Laux, Madden,
no.
McKim,
aye.
Miller,
no.
Moniz,
aye.
Nicholas,
no.
Northrup,
aye.
Patton,
aye.
Paxton,
aye.
Petroff, Pieperinen, Reeder, Simlick,
aye.
Summers,
aye.
Stubson,
aye.
Teeters,
no.
Throne,
aye.
Wallace,
no.
Wallace,
no.
Walters,
aye.
Watt,
aye.
Wilson, Winters,
aye.
Zwanitzer Dan,
aye.
Zwanitzer Dave,
aye.
Mr. Speaker,
no.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Burkhart, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 49 aye, 11 no.
Second reading, amendment number 1 has passed the House. Ladies and gentlemen, we have, by my count, 43 amendments. So far we've done 4. At this rate, I will not only be ordering pizza, we'll be ordering midnight snacks. So help me all you can. Next amendment for our consideration is second reading amendment number 7, Representative Walters.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. At this time, I would move second reading amendment number 7 to House Bill number 1 and would like to explain it a little bit. This is moving money from the Public Defender's Office to the Office of Tourism. From the Public Defender's Office, it's actually coming out of the capital cases account, which can be found on page 7 of your cheat sheet, footnote number 3 on that. And there's currently only one capital case going on in the state of Wyoming. It comes from Natrona County. It's been going on for many years. After this transfer, it would still leave $50,000 or a little over available of general fund money in that account. The purpose for moving it to the Department of Tourism is this is for the High School National Finals Rodeo and the College National Finals Rodeo. These two events bring about $15 million or a little more in direct impact into those two communities. And just the community where the water is sweet, it brings about $400,000 in direct tax revenue to the state. So this move of $118,000 is paid for almost 4 times over. So I would consider it to be budget neutral, as we are just shifting funds from one segment to the other, and I would urge for your support on this. Thank you.
Madam Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. I don't have real opposition to this amendment. I'm familiar with that case myself. And, of course, we have constitutional obligations in death penalty cases. And just want to ask the good sponsor if he's persuaded that there's enough money left to continue defense of that case.
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And if you look on page 10 of the budget bill, it's on Agency 8. I read, and this is how we kind of, the debate we had in the JC, there's currently, it was represented thus, 5 capital cases. And so we actually added a little bit to that. Both of these agencies have taken nearly a full 8% cut. And as we've debated already in our last 3 amendments, one where we added back a position downstairs, some are 1, 2%, some are held harmless, frankly. But both of these agencies took an 8%. Now we're going to make a policy decision on these capital cases or tourism. So we won't actually take a vote on this because it's a neutral. But just a reminder, on our last 3 amendments now, we've increased spending by $866,000. And that's fine. I mean, that's what we do. That's how we set policy. And $366,000 of that will double. That'll biennialize to $712,000. But I'm going to urge your no vote on this, and we've done quite a little bit of work on these budgets. Both of these areas have taken substantial cuts, and now we're just trying to move a little bit of money around for a couple of items. So I encourage your no vote.
Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. You have a choice. Prosecute the worst crimes in the state or fund the rodeo. On and against it.
Anyone else for the first time? Anyone for the second time prior to the sponsor? Representative Walters.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To answer a question from earlier, in the discussions I've had, I do believe there is still plenty of money to fund the ongoing capital cases that are going on, and that's why it was decided to try and shift this money and use it for a cause that will bring revenue back to the state of Wyoming as opposed to just letting it sit in an account doing nothing. So I would certainly urge your support for this. Thank you.
Questions on second reading amendment number 7 to House Bill 1. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Second reading amendment number 7 has failed. The next amendment for our consideration is second reading amendment number 26, Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. I move second reading amendment number 26 to House Bill 1. What this does, ladies and gentlemen, is take $10 million out of this fund that has $30 million in for the landfills. The $30 million will not be used for a period of time because they're in the middle of rulemaking. So they're trying to come up with the rules for these landfills so we could take $10 million out of here and not even interfere right now. Plus, we have the LUS funds, the leaking underground storage tanks that we just funded. So I think this is an appropriate thing to do, just take $10 million out of this fund.
Mr. Moriarty Whip.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. On and against this, we in the Minerals Committee, we've been working on this for quite some time, this landfill problem. And what this $30 million does is it helps the smaller communities who do not have the finances to make these mandated legislative moves of closing down their landfills, doing the transfer stations and everything like that. There are communities that if we do not provide them the proper amount of money on the proper timetable, it could bankrupt, and I mean bankrupt, at least 20 to 25 small communities in this state. The $30 million is a cut from where we previously were. It's just enough to get us started and get the list going. I would recommend that we vote this down.
Mr. Speaker.
Hey, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. I don't know as if I have any good justification on why we take money out of a savings account and move it to the general fund, and would like to ask the sponsor of the amendment why it needs to go to the general fund. This is money, brothers and sisters, that's already spent, whether we like it or not. Our landfills are leaking. Our waters are in danger. So we can save for a liability we already have, or we can pass this amendment and move money to the general fund, knowing that the day's going to come when we have to spend it anyway, because it's already spent money. So I'd urge you to look real strong and hard at this amendment, and let's keep our coffee cans full for money we've already spent, rather than kicking the can down the road and leaving our successor legislators scrambling to come up with hundreds of millions of dollars to remediate these landfills that we know are leaking and are a hazard right now.
Madam Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Just a quick comment. The LUST program is unrelated to the landfill program, so I'm not, so I don't really think funding of linking underground storage tanks has any relevance on landfill funding, at least not to my knowledge.
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Folks, in your goldenrod, just a piece so you can find these numbers. It's on page 5. The bottom fund shows you the municipal solid waste landfill account. So you can always check that on your goldenrod. And just so we all have the same information, you can see the beginning balance was $15 million. Last year, we put in another $15 million for the biennium. This year in the budget, supplemental budget, we added $15 million. So the total is $45 million in that account as it sits today. You can see House Bill 66 took $1.5 million. We appropriated from that account here a couple weeks ago on this floor. So as it stands now, it's $43.5 million. And this amendment, of course, would reduce by 10. And just kind of this is what, giving you the testimony we heard, probably a liability of $220 million. State responsibility is somewhere around 75% of that, $168 million. So you take this 43 from that, or the 33 if it's successful, however this works. But the bottom line, over 20 years, we're going to have to find a funding stream to do this. And we proposed this leaking underground storage tank. That's a proposal. We're not sure how it's going to work, whether we can get support from our bodies to do that. I mean, that's out there, but I guess that's the information, and I'm not going to jump on my sword on this one way or the other, but the part I do get concerned about, then we take this from a need that we have the money to do now, and we kick this back in the general fund, and then I start to worry what's happened on the last three budget amendments of what's coming and what's going to come on Friday. Now, where is this $10 million going to go? And so it makes me nervous. And I understand, I mean, there's going to be a, I can't refer to the other body down the hallway when this all comes together on committee and how it works and what we end up with the final budget. It could be interesting, to say the least. But so anyway, I'm going to just stop on that, and that's the information on the municipal solid waste account.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Leader. Just a comment. We've started, we've been working on this thing for sanitary landfills for the state and for our future safety and good living. We've worked out a program where it's high priority what we're doing up front so that we can delay some of the cost as long as possible but not get into problems. And so that's what we have in the budget now. I would urge your resistance to this amendment and leave the budget where it is. It's been worked down from, as mentioned, as much as $180 million down to $30 million. We're trying to do this thing properly and in a direct way, and I think we've got the right amount of money in the budget at the moment.
Representative Nicholas.
Thank you. Just to be, provide a little comfort for some of the testimony that you heard, the genesis of this amendment is not going to have any town go bankrupt. The obligations will be covered. The testimony that's been presented is, and particularly if we take a half penny from the loss fund, it'll be self-funded without this extra money. So the question is, do you want to put this money from one coffee can to another, and to give us a little leverage at the end of the day after we go through the second and third reading on what we want and what they want down the hall? So I would recommend you pass this because it will give us some good leverage, and there's no landfills going to go unfunded. Thank you.
Anyone else for the first time? Anyone for their second time prior to the sponsor? Chairman Norseman.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Just one little last piece of information. In our JC hearings, it left with $5 million in the supplemental budget. And then we have a round robin at the end. And this year we did an unprecedented second round robin, which, note to self, never do. I'll tell you more of the details, but it had an absent senator, and it's nice to outnumber the Senate by more than two. But anyway, so it was on that second round robin that 10 got added to this count. So our initial budget going into the last round robin was 5, and it did get added in, so that's more information.
Anyone else for the second time before the sponsor? Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. What the previous speaker said is adequate. Thank you.
The question is on Amendment Number 26 to House, Second Reading Amendment Number 26 to House Bill 1. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The amendment fails. Next amendment for our consideration is Second Reading Amendment Number 5 to House Bill 1. Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. I move Second Reading Amendment Number 1 to House Bill. Second Reading Amendment Number 5 to House Bill 1. As you know, during the session, I've been contacted by Department of Education employees or their attorneys. They've made allegations, and I'm not asserting that I know the validity of the allegations or not, but just their existence concerns me. They've told me in writing, one in a letter from an attorney and one in another document. In the letter from an attorney, my client's purpose in coming to see me was to ask whether there were legal consequences for using grant money for activities not specified in the grant, and because it appears the Office of Special Education Programs are being misled with respect to information being provided as to the use of grant money. In short, the employee has concerns because employees within the department are asked to certify that funds are being utilized in ways that are contrary to what the Department of Education intends to do with the money. Another issue includes the paying of stipends for attending workshops, participants receiving stipends for attending the same class twice, purchasing gifts for participants, and calling them instructional materials. That's out of one letter from an attorney. From another document, it says contract issues, violation of contract terms, paying more than specified in the contract. Contractors are asked to begin work before the contract is finalized. To be fair, Superintendent Hill denies these allegations. And like I said, I don't know the validity of these allegations, but I do know the allegations exist, and now so do you. We have an ethical and statutory obligation to ensure that government funds are spent correctly. I've contacted the Department of Audit to see what it would cost to conduct a personnel audit and a whistleblower audit and to expedite the results. We've had personnel problems in alignment in this agency for years. The amounts of the amendment are what our Department of Audit anticipates would be necessary for a whistleblower and personnel audit. This is a load in addition to their typical load that they have as the Department of Audit. It's money I don't want to spend, but I believe we have to spend. If the allegations are false, they're false, and that makes me happy. If they're true, they're true, but either way we'll know for sure. And just to be historically correct, last year we asked for an audit of one particular education account, the education assessment account, which is $28 million out of a $1.7 billion or $1.6 billion budget that was conducted during the last interim. That audit had a 99% accuracy rate in that particular account. I would hope that the other audits would show the same results, but it's important that we know for sure, particularly when federal dollars are involved. This is another one like the last one where the money's already spent, so I would urge you to vote for this amendment.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rising on in support of the amendment, it's been said time and time and time again since we've been in Cheyenne discussing these complicated issues that the department had this audit and had an audit and they were 99% in the clear. I want to take one more opportunity to say that that was an audit of a very specific small amount of money that dealt only with assessment. This is the kind of audit that needs to be performed so we can get the answers to all these unanswered questions. I would ask you to vote aye.
Anyone else for the first time? Representative Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Florida. Just a question on this. We're talking about the Department of Audit. Are we talking about the Administrative Department of Audit, or are we talking about the Legislative Post-Audit? It would seem that maybe one might be a little more economical than the other.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question is a simple one, and that is, does this involve personnel in the Department of Audit? We did, I look on page 32 of the budget, and we lost five FTEs in that department. We lost six. Five of them, I realize, are the computer people. But it seems to me, I vaguely remember somebody saying that this was an auditor that was going to be laid off or not hired or something like that. So I guess my question is for third reading whether we need to restore that position. It's really penny wise and pound foolish to just, you know, to be laying off auditors when they're the ones that can make us money.
Anyone else for the first time? Representative Conley.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. On and in favor of this amendment, I am one of the people, and I assume others as well, who have received numerous complaints from WDE employees and documents and allegations of misconduct. We need to get to the bottom of it if it is true, if it exists, and this is the mechanism to do it. So on and in favor of this amendment.
Anyone else for their first time? Anyone for their second time prior to the sponsor? Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. The department would be the Department of Audit. It's the department in the executive branch who does these types of audits and is familiar with this entity having done the audit of the education assessment account. That department is very responsive and very concerned about our budget matters. They didn't want to add any personnel and didn't ask for any additional personnel. What they do want to do is have some contractors to perform any additional duties, and this money they think would be used to handle contractors to perform the additional duties without adding personnel. So hopefully those answer all of your questions. Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
The question is on second reading, Amendment Number 5 to House Bill 1. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Second reading, Amendment Number 5 to House Bill One, the ayes have prevailed. A roll call vote is required under Rule 11-3. The clerk will call the roll.
Baker.
No.
Barlow.
Aye.
Berger. Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Levins.
Aye.
Lickry.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Byrd.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Coleman.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Davison.
No.
Eklund.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Filer.
Aye.
Freeman.
Aye.
Gay. Gay. Gingery.
No.
Goggles.
Aye.
Greer.
Aye.
Green.
Aye.
Halverson.
No.
Harshman.
Aye.
Harvey.
Aye.
Hunt.
Aye.
Hutchings.
No.
Yagi.
No.
Kasparic.
Aye.
Kirkbride.
Aye.
Croker.
No.
Crone.
Aye.
Larson.
Aye.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Laux.
No.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
No.
Miller.
No.
Moniz.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Northrup.
Aye.
Patton.
Aye.
Paxton.
Aye.
Petroff.
Aye.
Pieperinen.
No.
Reeder.
No.
Semlick.
Aye.
Summers.
Aye.
Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters.
Aye.
Throne.
Aye.
Wallace.
Aye.
Walters.
Aye.
Watt.
No.
Wilson.
Aye.
Winters.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
Gay.
No.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed, 45 aye, 15 no.
Second reading, amendment number 5 to House Bill 1 is passed. Madam Speaker Pro Tem.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, I move that the House rise and sit again at 1:30. 1:30.
Mr. Speaker.
I think that the correct motion is, because we're not in committee of the whole, recess until 1:30 p.m.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, ditto.
Committee reports. Committee announcements. Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet upon adjournment today, where we will hear three bills. We'll finish up with, and I'm sorry, I don't have my papers in front of me. I thought I had the right one. We will finish up with Senate File 60, Medicaid Reform. We'll work that bill. Then we will hear Senate File 48, Engrossed Medical Assistance Hospice Care, and Senate File 72, Medicaid Benefit Recovery.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Your committee number 4, Education, will meet immediately upon adjournment today in H-10 for consideration of Senate File 55.
Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee number 1, Judiciary, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. We will finish up Senate File 11, Circuit Court Magistrates, and then we will take up Senate File 53, Partitions, Actions, Subject to Subdivision Laws, Senate File 117, Confidentiality of Domestic Abuse Victim Information, and then at noon we will take up Senate File 127, Lien Notice, Senate File 114, Assault of Healthcare Providers, and Senate File 159, Threats of Bodily Injury or Death.
Vice Chairman Connolly.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, privilege of the floor.
Privilege. Please proceed.
Your Minority Caucus will be meeting upon noon recess at Two Doors Down, 118 West 17th Street, and you're all invited.
Madam Speaker Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee number 7, Corporations, will meet tomorrow, Thursday, February 7th, upon noon recess in room 18. We will be hearing Senate File 5, Insurance Limited Lines, Senate File 36, Insurance Publication Requirements, and Senate File 113, Insurance Guarantee Associations Act.
Chairman Harvey.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, it has come to my attention that the sponsor of Senate File 48 is indisposed and unable to attend our committee meeting tonight, and so Senate File 48 will be laid back.
The House will stand in recess until 1:30.